Okay, so let me thank the organizers of this program and also conference for inviting me here. Actually, the title that I denounced is the one given up here. It sort of said something like optic lattices to self-assembled lattices, and it sort of came when I got this email, you know, that the program here was called, I first read Beyond Optical Lattices and was always afraid. I said, is the game over now? No. But then I read more carefully, it said actually Beyond Standard Optical Lattices, was a little bit relieved then. But I felt I should talk about something also on self-assembled lattices. On last Thursday, I heard that Guido Pupillo is one of the main people behind all of these things in our group at home, was actually offered to give a talk on coming Friday. So of course, I should leave it up to Guido to talk about these things. And sort of in this sense, in the last minute, I changed my talk over to something that actually fits quite well with what actually Bill was actually mentioning before. I talk about open, which is, means disappointive quantum systems, but many body. This is a system which is very close to my heart. If somebody doing quantum optics and quantum information, you will see to some extent it's all of course back to the old days, but you know, with the extra twist of many body. And it's many body quantum simulation, but now of open systems. Let me mention that the main people involved, Andrew Daly is here, Sebastian Diehl is back home, Andrea Micheli, Markus Müller, and Guido Biller, also mentioned before, is here. Okay, so here's an outline of the talk. I will start out, I mean, this is a theory place here, so I would start out on something, you know, general introduction, which is actually a pretty theoretical subject. I would like to tell you in a few slides, and this is really theory at the moment, really pure theory, how open system dynamics can lead to certain desired many body states, and then talk about D-wave pairing induced by dissipation. That's very unusual. Normally we think of pairing induced by some attractive potentials, but here it will come from dissipation. After that, I will talk about something which was a paper together with Hans-Peter Büchler some time ago about the Rydberg quantum simulator. This sounds very futuristic. Again, it's about open systems. And the really great thing is that we convinced Rainer Platt with ions to do an experiment that corresponds sort of to the minimal instance of this idea here. And there's some first results, and I would like to show it. I know that this is not an ion conference, but I hope very much that these ideas also make it to the optical lattice community here. And at the very end of the talk, I will have maybe something like 5 minutes to talk about decoherence and heating in optical lattices due to emission of photons and so on. And this is kind of putting on my hat as a useful theorist. And I think that this is very relevant to ongoing experiments. And there's a lot of interesting things on this interplay between many body physics and then decoherence. Okay, so based on that, let me sort of start out by showing you what the theorist's dreams were a few years ago. I had this old slide that sort of said something like this. Imagine that we had atoms sitting in an optical lattice, like being spin up and spin down, if you want to think about quantum computing. The ideal world would be one where we can take a laser, address a single atom, maybe do some, you know, Ravi flop here. You would go to a certain site, measure this site. You would be able to entangle atoms, maybe even over a certain kind of a distance. And do also, for example, single shot measurements, you know, where in a single shot you ask, you know, is the spin up or down and things like this to measure, so to say, strings. All of these things have become true based on several experiments that were done, showing the one by Markus Greiner here that was actually also mentioned in the introduction by Bill. And I think that in the following, I will actually use a lot of these ideas here, sort of thinking that they will be available in the lab as one of the, you know, things that we can rely on. But let me now move on and tell you sort of what the basic ideas are and the kind of things that we are interested in when you talk about, I called it here, preparing interesting many body states, highly correlated states, and maybe some entangled states that are a useful resource for let's say, quantum computing, whatever you would like to do. The standard scenario that all of us have in mind is this. If you talk to condensed matter people, and that's of course also true to some extent when you think about the optical lattice community, you know, you take an Hamiltonian, or we engineer a Hamiltonian in our context, that has a very interesting ground state. And by cooling, we go down and actually make this kind of a state. So we get strongly correlated states. And this is, of course, a system which is in thermal equilibrium. This is quantum simulation and sort of engineering Hamiltonian. The kind of things that I've shown down here, sort of looking at the time evolution of spins or qubits by decomposing time evolution into gates, for example, is something which is much more associated with coherent Hamiltonian evolution, therefore quantum gates and therefore quantum computing. And normally in our context, we think of trapped ions as sort of being closer to this ideal. But I would say that things have changed now because, you know, based on this individual addressing here, all of these things here are also part of the optical lattice community here. So this was two ways, and this is kind of standard here. Let me now add a third one here, which is the one that we talk about, an open system. What is an open system? We have a system coupled to some environment, and there's some time evolution going on that entangles the system with the environment, but we don't observe the environment. So at the end of the day, what we have is not a unitary time evolution of your system. You have what we call a quantum operation, also Krauss map. This is a non-unitary mapping here, according to some Krauss operators, EK over here, that reflect the time evolution of your density matrix of your system here. So this is entanglement of the environment. Usually this is, you know, the discussion of decoherence, and then it's very sad and so on. But let me do and ask the question, can we engineer, for example, the coupling to the environment, like engineering these Krauss maps here, that at the end, for example, we produce a certain state, you know? So this certain state here could be an entangled state. Can we sort of do a pumping to a state like this? This, of course, is what all of the atomic physics people have done for many years, but on a single particle level. Think of optical pumping. We have some ground states over here. This can be a mixed state. By applying a laser, we pump everything into one state. We are purifying the state. Laser cooling is just the same story. So what's being done, you know, in atomic physics is that we purify states to produce a certain state. And the only thing I'm saying here is this. Let's not do these things only now for the case of single particles. Can we not do the same thing on a multi-particle level and make this sort of optical pumping into certain given entangled states that we would like to create? Let's make this the theme of what we want to do. Okay, now in quantum optics, sort of the usual kind of thing that we do is this, that we have a system coupled to a bath, but I emphasize that we always have driven dissipative systems. So we also have some lasers that drive our system, which is coupled to a bath. So there's always an energy flow here. I mean, laser cooling, optical bumping is one example for them. And of course, our way of modeling this thing is to write down a master equation where we have a Hamiltonian. And then we have some kind of dissipation going on over here. And there will be competing dynamics, of course, between Hamiltonian. This at the end, in our case, could be some Hubbard Hamiltonian and some dissipation, either in the form of decoherence, or we can also try to engineer it. And so in the sense of asking, can we engineer paths, we can also ask the question here, can we sort of design these Liouvillians describing dissipation in such a way that in steady state, you go not to some mixed state, but to a pure state, and this pure state is the desired one that you wanted to somehow engineer in the lab. You can call it some sort of non-equilibrium cooling, but also this is really engineering quantum reservoirs, but we do it now in the case of many-body systems. So this is really the new twist of the story. And we can somehow see that the future is really very far in the past because Bill mentioned before laser cooling and say dissipative optical lattices. We are sort of going back to these roots, but now with many particle physics here. To make these things a little bit formal, so if I have a lattice over here, think of atoms sitting on this lattice, what we ask is the following thing. These Liouvillians here can always be written in the form of these Lindblad operators that in quantum optics we call quantum jump operators that reflect the coupling of the system here to the bath. And when you want something like a state which is decoupled from the environment, it is sort of pump everything into the particular state that normally we call here dark state, you would like to have the condition that, you know, give me a certain state that you would like to get by this optical many-body pumping. You know, let's find a system of bath operators here so that this is a dark state relative to that. It has to be compatible with the Hamiltonian. In many of our cases, H can even be zero. And then this, you know, guarantees, there's some uniqueness theorems here, guarantees that if I take a general initial density matrix, it sort of is attracted to the state that one is interested in. And this is the desired state that we would like to build here. Another way of phrasing this is that, you know, in condensed matter physics, you often have the problem. I give you a state, what's the Hamiltonian where this given state is a ground state? We call these parent Hamiltonians. To some extent, what we're doing here is this, that we are constructing parent Liouvillians. We are constructing dissipation in such a way that the steady state is a pure state. And so to say, all states kind of attract to this given state that we would like to get. Okay, so let me now give you examples for this thing. This sounds very, you know, general. And there's one paper with Sebastian Diehl that will come out in PRL that talks about one example, which is D-wave pairing induced by dissipation or driven dissipation. Driving is important for us. Let me tell you what it is. Okay, normally when I will talk in the following about D-wave pairing, all of you will have in mind that, you know, the usual Hubbard model 2D repulsive interactions, and then if you want to do, say, a mean field ansatz in the form of a BCS state with D-wave pairing and your Goodswill are projected, it is a variational state, which is to some extent a good or maybe not so good approximation to the ground state of this Hamiltonian over here. I want you to take now this D-wave paired Cooper paired state in the following, not as a state which is associated with this Hamiltonian at all. It is a state that independent of any Hamiltonian we would like to get. So I'm asking now, can we construct dissipation, where dissipation by itself alone, so to say, gives you a time evolution where you attract an initial general density matrix, a mixed thermal state, and it sort of evolves and finally goes to the paired state. So dissipation induces pairing. Okay, so let's do a little bit of mathematical exercises here. For example, I'm writing down here a BCS state of n particles in the way that you learn it by reading, say, Leggett's book. And you call D dagger now the equation operator for a pair of fermions, spin up and spin down with this momentum q minus q. And phi of q is the corresponding wave function of your Cooper pairs. And we want now offside pairing, and sort of to make it more interesting, I'm writing down here the example of a D-wave pairing state, you know, that corresponds to this wave function that I've written down over here. So these are the wave functions of delocalized Cooper pairs, D-wave pairs, sitting on the lattice. And the question that we're asking now is this, is the state that we're writing down here the dark state of a certain Lindblad operator? So let's construct the corresponding parent Liouvillean for this corresponding state. Well, it takes a lot of work. You know, here's again my master equation, here's a set of quantum jump operators. At the end of the hard work, you find, you get an answer that you have a set of quantum jump operators, and we just point out the basic structure here. You have a C, C dagger here, and these things are offside. So this is particle number conserving, but this only involves two operators, the C and the C dagger. Therefore, it is a single particle, quasi-local operator that acts on these lattices here. And it turns out that of all of these set of operators, the BCS state is a zero state. So if you had some dissipation in your lab that allowed you to incorporate this kind of quantum jump operators in the sense of the master equation, all of your time evolution would essentially go to the pairing state. You would have induced pairing by purely dissipative dynamics. And you can also add, of course, a real part to this Hamiltonian here, a U. I mean, here's our master equation. And in this case, you sort of have discussed or actually have derived even a parent Hamiltonian in the usual sense. If I ignore dissipation here for the moment, this would be a normal parent Hamiltonian, where the BCS state would be the ground state in the ordinary sense. So we have quasi-local single particle operators that produce, in this sense here, pairing. So it's pairing by dissipation. Well, at this point, you might say we don't really see what's going on. So let's go to the computer and do some simple calculations done by Wei-Yi, where you take the entropy, and as a function of time, indeed, for example, you get entropy zero, you produce a pure state, and you ask what's the fidelity of getting the right state, the fidelity goes up to one. But let me sort of make a comment now on, you know, let's try to investigate what's going on now very close to this final stage over here. You know, there's this point which corresponds to your D-wave state induced by pairing, and we have a certain number of states around. Let's try to explore this small neighborhood around these states. Well, if you write down your corresponding master equation over here, and then the corresponding Hamiltonian, you see that you can actually do standard BCS-type theory. You can introduce quasi-particle operators and so on. The essential part is only that you get an I in front. So we have here a pairing gap, which translates in our case to a dissipative pairing gap. And what it really means is this, that the approach to the equilibrium here in our model is actually exponential. We have a pairing gap now as a dissipative pairing gap, and we have an exponential approach to this final state. Well, at this point, I could sort of start to talk about implementing how to do all of these things. I will not do it in my talk here today. I just mentioned that these ideas of constructing parent Liouvillians and then implementing in the lab can also be done for a BEC. It would be very interesting to ask, can I get by this kind of dissipative cooling also Laughlin states as the, so to say, attraction point of some dissipative dynamics, or also then exotic spin models? And I will talk about exotic spin models right now, because as I said, at the end, I want to show an experiment. It goes along these lines and shows some of these ideas in a very minimal way. Okay, and this will be work that was done together with Hans-Peter Büchler's group. Okay, example two that I will not talk about, I just want to mention it. You know, we have here in our models dissipation, and we have over here Hamiltonian. In principle, we can control the dissipation relative to the Hamiltonian. These can be interactions. This, for example, could be some Liouvillean driving to a BEC, something like this. There will be competition. And there's a whole scenario of talking about dynamical quantum phase transitions in these models, like a non-equilibrium phase diagram and so on. But this would really be an extra talk. So let me now focus on this model here that looks pretty crazy, sort of, you know, theorists when they dream about these things. But as I said, you know, we want to do these things on the 2D lattice. We have, this is how we wrote this original paper with Hans-Peter Büchler here. But I will show you at the end that sort of a minimal instance of this thing has now been done in the context of an ion trap experiment, sort of mapping 2D problems to a 1D problem that's not scalable. I'm very well aware of that. But it shows the basic features. So what will come in the following sort of has an experimental realization. Okay, so I'm back now to the slide that I had at the very beginning where I said, okay, optical lattices, and we are now equipped with all of these kind of things here. That's great. Now, if you want to have the single site addressing, what it normally means is that you know, you can also, or maybe it's better to take large spacing optical lattices where the distance between these lattice points is relatively large in order to make the single site addressing easier. But it also means that the tunneling is quite small. So usually, I mean, Hubbard models can be done in this case, but the corresponding energy scales, because the tunneling is small, are usually much smaller. So the kind of problems that maybe come first in this kind of implementations are probably spin models. You want to make very deep lattices, but then you need a way how these spins over here in these lattices talk to each other in a different way. And of course, we have a way of doing this, and this is long distance interactions that are strong Rydberg interactions. And so Rydberg interactions will play an essential role. So summarizing all of this, what we want to study now is a model like this. Let me take an optical lattice, okay? And I've drawn here a honeycomb lattice for whatever reason. And we call these things here spins of qubits, you know, that are very deep down in these optical wells. And then we want to induce here interactions between them, between the spins, without moving them. So it's not the usual kind of an exchange coupling that we talk about. We want to do these things by Rydberg interactions. And actually, the way that we will do it is that I will introduce auxiliary Rydberg atoms into this lattice that sort of play the role of the mediator of interactions between some other atoms over here. So we have large spacing optical lattices to make them addressable. We have Rydberg-Rydberg interaction as the ingredient to do the long distance interactions. And the goal is to do exotic spin models. And in particular, I would like to do n-spin interactions, or sort of, then also to do dissipative cooling dynamics on these lattices. So what I said before, in terms of dissipation, we would like to implement on these optical lattices. But as you will see, we will need not only n-spin interactions, we will also need sort of Lindblad operators that are n-particle operators. The question is how to do these things. As a side remark, there's these you know, ideas by Kidayev and Breskill and so on, and topological quantum memory and fault around the quantum computing. Essentially, what we do in these models is that we have physical representations, you know, of these ideas down here in these kind of systems here. And I believe that they are experimentally actually quite realistic. Okay, so here's two slides about Kidayev. And you know, the question is simply, let me take an exotic spin model. And of course, I want to be pedagogical here and talk about something that everybody knows. So a strange, you know, exotic Hamiltonian is that you write down a sum of what we call stabilizer operators AP and BS. These are operators that correspond to products of four Pauli matrices on a plaquette here, or maybe also on a star, like indicated over here with the X and the Z. And you can see that, I mean, why it is pretty hard to do something like this in the lab, because you want four body interactions and only four body interactions involving four spins. So this is sort of the paradigmic model that everybody in this whole context always would like to implement, and it is the simplest one of a whole class of problems. And I will afterwards show experimental results for these things here. So from this point of view, let me focus in on this particular model. Now, these operators AP and PS, they actually commute with each other, which is great. That makes the model immediately solvable. We have here that the APs, the product of Pauli matrices, are plus and minus 1. And this corresponds to the situation of having excitations, you know, in this thing here that we call magnetic excitations or charge excitations. And these excitations correspond to abelian anions in this particular model. And so when you talk about magnetic excitations, of course, you know, they can actually move around and so on. But the challenge is now, how do we get these four-point interactions, and how do we actually go get cooling in a model like this? So let me, instead of, you know, being very general, write down a toy model that sort of summarizes what the basic problems are or challenges are that one is facing. Let me write down a master equation here. You know, and you can see that this master equation has a Hamiltonian part. And think of this Hamiltonian part representing now four spins on the lattice. And we want this Hamiltonian to have, for example, four body interactions. This is the stabilizer operator that I said before. It has eigenvalues plus and minus 1. So the ground state, you know, of this system here will be all states that have, you know, the same parity. And the first excited state of the system, they will be highly degenerate. There will be 16 overall states, 8 forming the ground state manifold, and then 8 forming the first excited state. They correspond to these, you know, plus minus 1 eigenvalues of these stabilizer operators. But can we now do cooling in these kind of systems? And actually, to write down a master equation that incorporates cooling to the ground state manifold is very simple. I mean, this was the picture over here. We would like to do cooling here, say, in optical bumping in atomic physics from one state to another one by applying a laser. But what we are now asking is this, that we would like to do cooling between the stabilizer minus one, you know, sub-manifold of my Hilbert space, and plus one. We would like to do an optical bumping that takes all of the particles, say, from the excited state here to this ground state manifold. And actually, writing down a quantum jump operator is quite easy for us. What we have to do is simply to write down a projection operator on the stabilizer. For example, that if you are in the state plus one here, you know, it's one minus one. This is like a projection operator in the state plus one. You can see you do nothing here. This is a dark state. But if you're in the state minus one over here, then this thing starts acting, but then you have to flip one of the spins to put it, so to say, into the other one. So this indeed is a Lindblad operator, which in its most simple form corresponds to an optical bumping from one stabilizer ground state to another one. So we're doing really optical bumping here of many particle states in this context. You can see the challenge now here is quite obvious. How do we get these, you know, very difficult four-body Hamiltonians, and how do we get these even more complicated Lindblad operators here? This sounds somehow hopeless. But we will do it now in different ways. Actually, the one that I would like to talk about in the following is this one here. When we talk about quantum simulation, this is sort of a general remark here. In the Hamiltonian context, we can talk about always on. This is what we usually do in optical lattices. We, you know, engineer Hamiltonian that's always on lasers and so on. Or you can do it in a stroboscopic way. This is really what the computer scientists would call quantum simulation. And you can do the same thing for an open system. So in the following, I will explain to you a scheme which is an open system scheme, because we also want to include cooling and these Lindblads and all of that. And we want to do this stroboscopic stuff over here. Yeah? But we have also versions of this up here to do that and so on. But let me focus in on that, because at the end, this is the conceptually most simple one, even though maybe the experimentally not most realistic. But as you will see, in the ion traps, it can be done, and I guess also in the optical lattices. So along these lines, I mean, let me just remind you, what do we mean by this analog simulation? Most of the people, when they talk about optical lattice experiment, is that they have some Hamiltonian, whatever it is, you know, you cool down to the low temperatures, and then you realize the ground state of, say, a Bose-Hubbard or Fermi Hamiltonian, whatever these things are. So in this sense, we built a quantum system with the desired dynamics and controllable parameters, for example, these Hubbard models here. When you would like to get exotic spin models out of these models, what you usually have to do is this, that you take your two particle interactions that you have and sort of by some higher order perturbation theory, get something very interesting out. The main problem that we have is only that, you know, when you base it on these Hubbard models, these terms come out in some high order perturbation theory, but they're usually very small. So this is maybe not the most effective way to get n-body interactions. I will therefore switch over to this one here, which is what we call is digital quantum simulation. What you do in digital quantum simulation is that you have some Hamiltonian and you want to look at the time evolution. And you decompose this time evolution into little time steps. And each of these Hamiltonians now is the sum of certain operators that act on the different spins or qubits that you have. And then you decompose them according to the Trotter formula so that at the end you can represent the whole time evolution here as a sequence of single particle gates, two particle gates, or maybe also n qubit gates here. And that's what we will do afterwards to mimic then, you know, the corresponding effective time evolution of your system. So you mimic or sort of simulate the time evolution in a stroboscopic way. And that's really what Seth Lloyd originally called a quantum simulator. And when you talk to quantum information people, that's really what they would call quantum simulation, not, you know, what we had here before. But now we can also, of course, extend these ideas to include now open system dynamics that, you know, in between, we can also have entangling operation with the environment that correspond to implementation of this crowd, of these Krauss maps here. And therefore, we can sort of engineer these couplings to the environment in a certain way, which at the very end, you know, just corresponds to this simple picture. We're just doing optical bumping here, together with also coherent interactions that would correspond to star shifts here, which do something like this. But we do it in a many-body context. So we're taking very old ideas, and we're just adding the word many-body to the whole story. Okay. The challenge is, of course, as I said, you want to do n-body quantum jump operators. Remark number two, there's been enormous progress in the context of using Rydberg atoms and of course also Rydberg gates. And it sort of goes back to a very old idea that we had together with Misha Lukin of say so you have two atoms in an optical lattice, and we discussed, for example, a gate idea, which was based on the fact that if you laser excite atoms in a spin-selective way to a Rydberg state, you can have here huge interactions. These are dipolar interactions that are, I mean, orders of magnitude larger than any of the other interactions that we normally know in atomic physics. And out of this whole story, you can actually make a gate of these things. Now, it's great to see that Philippe Grangier's group and also Safman have recently implemented these things in the lab, and this has been very recent achievement. So these things are in principle available. So let's take these ideas and, for example, generalize them. And we wrote a paper recently that I don't want to explain in much detail because I don't really need the results here. Now, if I take a Rydberg atom, say, you know, an auxiliary atom, I can write down, for example, a gate operation, which is written down here, where if this controller, Rydberg controller, this is in the ground state, is in the state 0 or is in the state 1, acts on a certain environment which is addressable by my addressable optical lattices in such a way that if I'm in 0, nothing happens to these atoms over here. If I'm in state 1, then I have here a product of different Pauli matrices. So this is an entangling operation that collectively acts on all of these qubits at the same time. Now, actually, this gate has a large number of, you know, really nice advantages, very fast, high fidelity, and all of these things, but that's I don't want to talk about Rydberg gates here. So in this sense, let me come back to this digital quantum simulation and give you now sort of a stroboscopic picture of the kind of laser pulses that we have to shine on this in order to implement the master equation that has this Hamiltonian part, but also the dissipative part that I mentioned here before. So this is the bigger picture, but we'll really focus in at the very end on the single black hat over here, and we have here X controllers because we want here X interactions, and then we have here C controllers that correspond to having C four spin interactions here. Okay, so what's the general idea? What we would like to get is interactions that correspond to four Pauli matrices, or then also dissipation that involves four or even then five Pauli matrices. How do we do that? Well, these eigenstates of the SX correspond to sort of, you know, two subspaces, one with the plus one eigenvalues, like, you know, plus, plus, minus, minus, they would be balanced over here, or if there's an unbalanced spin, it would be minus one. And the idea is now to have sort of use your entangling operations in such a way that you entangle the subspace over here of the four qubits that you want to talk about here, you know, these are the fours that correspond to one of these black heads here, with this controller atom, in such a way that depending if you're in the plus or minus one eigenstate, you would like to put this information into the auxiliary atom. So the auxiliary atom at the end of a certain mapping step will know if this was in the sub eigenspace plus one, because this is zero, or if it is in the sub eigenspace minus one, which is the one over here. But at this point, you have sort of, you know, put this information about the stabilized operator and in what subspace you are relative to the corresponding eigenvalue. You've put this thing then onto the extra atom. And then we can manipulate this extra atom and sort of write these things back. And this at the end will allow us to do this operation that we want. Okay, I'm not sure to what extent I should really show you all of these details now here of, you know, how to do these gates. But it's actually quite amusing and quite impressive because at the end, as I said, I will show an experiment that actually did all of these things in much more actually technical detail than I'm even indicating here. So let's first talk about how do we get four-body interactions. Well, four-body interactions sort of come along in the following way. I have here my string of my four atoms, and I have an auxiliary atom over here, which is prepared in the state zero. The first thing I do is this, that I bring it into a superposition state, and then, you know, I act with my, you know, great n-qubit gate on this whole thing over here, and then I undo this thing. So what does this thing correspond to? At the very beginning, we had here the control atom, here the spin atoms, and then here comes the gate sequence. So at the very beginning, we started, you know, this was over here with zero, and we had, say, the state plus plus minus one. This is a representative of one part of the Hilbert space with the plus one eigenvalue, or then the minus one eigenvalue over here. Then what we did is that we did this little pi by two pulse over here. So what we did is a 0 plus 1 superposition and a 0 plus 1 superposition over here. But then what this gate operation here does is it puts a minus sign down here when we are in the lower part of the subspace over here, and the plus sign up here. So at this point, if I do the second pi by 2 pulse, you can see the Rydberg atom now knows, you know, if this was plus or minus even or odd parity that we have over here by having the state 0 or 1. But at this point, of course, you can sort of go back, and now the Rydberg atom, so this auxiliary atom, knows about that, and we can put a face on it, and now we can undo all of these things. And so the consequence of all of this is that, you know, the 0 gets an e to the plus I some phase, or e to the minus alpha some phase, depending if this is even or odd parity over here. So you put all of these things together, and what you have done now is a single time step of your digital simulator, where the time evolution corresponds to this Hamiltonian, and this Hamiltonian is exactly this four-part interaction that was sort of incorporated in these gates that we have done over here. Okay, so this is the idea of stroboscopic simulation, and all of you will admit that this sounds sort of, you know, very complicated and crazy. But let's do it even more crazy by adding dissipation to the whole story. You know, in dissipation, what we want is that we want an optical bumping sort of one part of the subspace into another one over here. And so we want, again, we do the same thing, a conditional flip. You know, if you are in the wrong subspace, you know, let me flip the spin in the other one, because then it puts it into the right one. And then, you know, you undo this gate and you put the standard optical bumping like we know it in optical bumping of single atoms, but now on the auxiliary atom. Okay, so these things sound pretty crazy, but then, you know, at the moment, the optical lattices are not at the point where they are able to do it right away, even though I said all of the ingredients here. So then Markus Müller, who's a student in our group, and Julio, who is a postdoc in Rainer Platz group, came together and said, okay, can we do this idea, for example, of a single plaquette with ions and implement this whole gate sequence? And that's what they did. And let me just show you sort of the highlight of the whole experiment, which is taking one of these Kedaev plaquettes over here. And let me now take four stabilizer operators. Here's this four particle stabilizer. And I said before, the ground state of this is not unique. Let me make it unique by adding these stabilizers that are just, you know, two particle stabilizers over here. And now we want to do optical bumping according to what I said before. But we want to do optical bumping on a plaquette to, I mean, the final state, which is compatible with all of these commuting operators here as a GHC state. What you do in the experiment is that you start out with a completely mixed state, and then you successively imply these operators. For example, here a C1, C2. This is this, you know, kind of a Bell state cooling we are doing here. Takes out certain parts here. Then another one. Finally, you know, this complicated four-particle stabilizer, what comes out, and this is the experimental result of a tomography. You get the GHC state out that you want. So this is experimental implementation of optical bumping of many particle states on the lattice. And the real thing, actually, well, in this case, on an ion trap, and the real thing, of course, would be to do these things on the lattice. This would be scalable. I mean, these ion traps are not scalable. I really believe that this is a remarkable experimental highlight of being able to do, you know, stabilizer cooling of all of these stabilizers that we have over here. They are commuting set of operators. And at the very end, you cool to one, you know, state, which is the plus eigenvalue of all of these operators that we have over here. Okay, you can also try to do similar ideas now by trying to mimic this Hamiltonian here. Can we mimic four-part interactions? Like, you know, this would be the Hamiltonian over here. And indeed, if you don't do the optical bumping in this intermediate sequence, this is, in their case, this is a Mölmer-Sørensen entangled gate that they had, together with some putting on some phase shift, you know, they could essentially show that they get these kind of four-part interactions. So four-part interactions, and also the disruptive part of doing Krauss map engineering was shown in the experiment. But as I said before, to do it really scalable requires optical lattices, and then to do these things in 2D. But all of the tools are available. Okay, so let me now move on and sort of, you know, after this kind of little bit crazy ride that we had now, come to the point where we want to do something quite useful, okay? Bill, in the introduction, mentioned that in the early days, you know, we had optical lattices, but they were usually dissipative optical lattices because you wanted to do laser cooling. And of course, by going to very far of resonant lattices, the situation that we have is this, that we can realize all of our Hubbard models, and the spontaneous emission that we have becomes an element of decoherence. And these lattice experiments have now become so accurate that, you know, that this decoherence is quite visible. And there's the interesting question of, you know, adding to the models that we have, which will be the standard Bose-Hubbard or maybe Fermi-Hubbard Hamiltonians that we normally discuss, sort of add the part, which is now not an engineered interaction, but now really the decoherence, which is decoherence due to spontaneous emission. And so the new part of the story, and this is sort of, you know, going back really to the roots of optical lattices, is now to understand the effect of this decoherence. But we do it now in the case of, you know, many body physics. So we would like to see the interplay between strongly correlated Hubbard dynamics over here and spontaneous emission over here. But you should not forget that the spontaneous emission part over here is not necessarily single atom-like. It can also be many particle-like. And I believe that, let me show you now some results and sort of what the basic ideas are behind this theory. This is just taking old laser cooling and extended it in a way that's in principle straightforward, in practice quite tedious. And with Hannes Biechler, who was a remarkable diploma student, and Andrew Daly, we had put a paper on the archive that describes some of these results. And I believe, as I said, that would be quite interesting actually to do experiments where you turn on dissipation by hand and you really see the destruction of these many-body results that you have over here based on this spontaneous emission here. So it's the interplay between decoherence and many-body physics. Okay, let me first of all give you the zero-order picture behind the whole story, then write down my equations, and then sort of, you know, extract what the message is behind it. How much time is left? 10. Okay, so plenty of time. Okay, so these are pictures that you would sort of draw coming from the single particle world. What I've done here is this. I've drawn here an optical lattice. And this optical lattice corresponds to a situation where we have what we call a rad-detuned lattice, where the laser generating the lattice here would be actually detuned to the rad side of some excited resonance. So this means that the minima of the lattice that we have here would be the points of maximum intensity. And when, you know, just following our usual way of writing down the Hubbard models, we would first calculate our Vanier functions. There would be a Vanier function sitting over here, corresponding to this ground state optical band, to the ground state Bloch band here. And there would be processes like the one going on here that this would be sitting just in the middle of very bright light, because this is the red lattice. There would be a process like in ion trap laser cooling, where you go up and then you go down. This would be an optical bumping process. And this optical bumping process would go like the rate of spontaneous emission times the population in the excited state, which is some Ravi frequency divided by the tuning square. But you can also see that decoherence, what it will do is this, it will start populating the excited spans. But to the extent that you are in the Lamb-Dickey limit, which is that the Vanier functions are much smaller than the distance between the different lattice sites, you would sort of go up here and then, you know, populate the first excited band. And this would be suppressed by a factor here, eta square. And eta is just the Lamb-Dickey parameter that we know so well, say, from also ion traps, which is simply the ground state sort of harmonic oscillator wave function size, you know, the width of this Vanier function here divided by lambda. And this is usually much less than one. So the processes that go on in this single particle picture would be just go up and then go down here. This would be a very strong process here, and then this bumping to the first excited state. And then we have here the blue detuned lattice case, where you go from the ground state. Now, to lowest order Lamb-Dickey, going back down to the ground state will not happen, because in the blue detuned case, these Vanier functions sit at a point where the light intensity from the lattice laser is actually close to zero. You're sitting at one of the nodes and not near the maxima. And so the process that will happen is only the population of the excited state. So that's similar over here, but this process over here is actually missing. So it's clear at this point that rad detuning gives rise to more spontaneous emission events in deep lattices, and processes returning atoms to the lowest band are strongly suppressed for the case of blue detuning. Okay, so let's now start and write down master equations to describe all of these things. And I will go over these things quickly because they are a little bit more technical. So maybe you should at the end not look at the slides here, but I will try to explain these things with my hands. So our goal is to derive a master equation, rho, for a many-body density operator of n particles moving on the lattice. And it will have the usual structure of these, you know, Lindblad dynamics, where what we want to write down is the corresponding Hamiltonian over here. And there will be a zero-order Hamiltonian, single-particle physics. There will be some radiative effects like dipole-dipole interactions and then some collisional effects. So let's write them out carefully. Well, the sort of first part over here is kind of a trivial part, because if I write down in second quantization what, you know, the Hamiltonian is, You know, it would be kinetic energy, there would be the optical potential, and this is the standard stuff, and this is the usual picture that we draw here. And how deep is the optical potential? Well, it's just Rabi frequency square divided by delta, if I make a simplifying assumption of talking about a two-level system over here and going off resonance with a certain amount delta. It's easy to generalize these things to more complicated cases and including more levels. So what's now the effect of spontaneous emission? And as you can see here, this looks very complicated, but let me sort of, you know, reduce it down to some very simple statement. What comes in, of course, as everybody knows, is there will be dipole-dipole interaction between these particles. So if one of these atoms in the internal first excited state, you know, there can be sort of flip-flop kind of interactions that are described by this. The really interesting part of this master equation is actually the one which is written down here, because this contains the really interesting physics, and this amounts to the following. You can see that this is a quantum jump operator, psi dagger psi, which is just the density. So here's a density rho, and then a density over here. And you can see that this density x, this density y that we have over here, is multiplied by some function x minus y, and this function is very localized. And actually, the physics behind this is a very simple one. If you look at these results from Markus Gaina, you know, in the microscope, every time that you see a fluorescence photon that can't be detected, what it amounts is this, that it will sort of localize the corresponding atom to something within the wavelengths. And so it is exactly this function over here that corresponds, you know, with the photon emission, that you sort of localize the wave packet. Yeah? And so these will be the heating terms that eventually show up, you know, that come from the cycling, from this optical bumping in the optical lattice here. And then, of course, we have the physics that happens very close in. I've drawn here Born-Oppenheimer curves. And when you come in, you take the physics over here. All of us would normally describe this kind of physics that's going on here by writing down, say, a contact interaction, then also scattering lengths, you know, psi, 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 and here would be the scattering lengths. Now, imagine that you do something like an optical Feshbach resonance. You would sort of include the optical Feshbach resonance also at the end of the day as something which is a scattering length over here. But it will be intensity dependent and reflect the fact that we have, you know, an optical Feshbach resonance. But an optical Feshbach resonance can also have an imaginary part. So the way of including this short-range physics is that we get the real part, the usual scattering lengths, maybe intensity-dependent. And of course, we also get an intensity-dependent imaginary part. And the first person to write these things down was actually Zsóra Slapnikov a long time ago when he talked about optical Feshbach resonances. So we just take this whole package and put it in as part of our Hamiltonian. So, and then you do the standard stuff, you know, decompose into your Wannier functions and you write down your Hubbard models, you know, in the way that we know it. It is actually multiband Hubbard models, and it contains all of these terms, and I will reduce it now to a simple one. Let's do a very simple model sort of for an illustration here. Yeah? Let's go to the red case, and then in the red case, I do a single particle model. Then you can see, of course, spontaneous emission, what it does, it just adds a term here in this master equation that corresponds to a defacing term that with every spontaneous emission event that happens with the optical bumping rate gamma, is sort of localizing the particles here. And now you can try to solve such equations, or maybe even, you know, solve the one that we have up here and do a mean field Gutzwiller ansatz, or really do something like, for example, time-dependent DMRG. Now, Andrew Daly is an expert for time-dependent DMRG. And he has combined quantum simulation ideas, you know, quantum Monte Carlo simulations of wave function together with DMRG to simulate and solve these kind of equations here. And let me just show a few results and not really enter these things in more detail. You know, this was the picture that I had here before, reticuled optical lattices. We had very large, you know, rates that just corresponds to optical bumping back to the ground state or the repopulation bumping to the first excited state. In the blue detuned case, we only had, you know, process where you go to the first excited band. Now, if I plot down here, by really, and this is a plot produced by Andrew and Hannes Bichler, U divided by J, standard Hubbard model, over here you're in the Mott insulator regime, over here you're in the superfluid regime. You can see what's going on here. This is plotting the rate of the spontaneous emission of photons in this regime and this regime over here. If you are in the superfluid regime, there's a certain probability that there's several particles on one lattice side. This means that there's a bosonic enhancement factor in this regime here. And you can see that this is, you know, what we get over here. This is bosonic enhancement for bosons due to the enhancement over here. In the case of fermions, of course, there would be a suppression over here. Now, in the case of blue detuning, you can see the rate is much, much lower down here. A little bit surprisingly, when you calculate the energy, or maybe it's not, I think it's obvious in the limit where one has well localized atoms here. you know, if you go to the tight binding limit, it's obvious that a process like this will not change the energy. A process like this, where you really change the energy, is the one which is pumping to the first excited band. And you can see that this blue one and the red one, of course, here, are the same energy increase, at least with this Lamb-Dickey argument over here, and it actually turns out to be even more generally valid. So the heating rate per atom is the same in the red as well as the blue optical lattice. But these scattering rates that you have here, of course, have a completely different effect on the mod insulator, because if you got a scattering light over here, you know, maybe you're not heating up your energy you know, in a different way, but you're destroying the coherence in a completely different way. So in the superfluid, we have sort of, you know, a delocalized atom, and then we have a spontaneous amount that delocalizes it and puts in, reduction of the wave packet by spontaneous emission. In a mod insulator, this thing wouldn't care very much about these things. And then there's the question, you know, once you have excitations of this, it will be sort of hot particles, how do they thermalize with the rest of the other ones? And Andrew Daly did some calculations that I guess I don't really have time to explain in much detail, but maybe Andrew can comment in the discussion on that. That talks about, you know, taking the superfluid and mod insulator regime and taking these usual kind of correlation functions that are associated with the visibility of the different phases, like superfluid phase and also mod insulator phase, and then studying these things as a function of time, where you can see the destruction of all of these kind of correlations over here. And then, you know, this is a perturbation theory result, and if you go with time-dependent DMRG beyond perturbation theory, you get differences between mod insulator, superfluid. There's a lot of things here to be tested that, you know, could be done in the present experiment. Okay, so Bill is giving me the signal that my time is over. We'll just summarize on the last slide. I've talked about dissipation here and doing, you know, something very familiar to all of us, namely optical bumping and laser cooling, but now in a many particle context. I started out with something very theoretical, which was writing down a D-wave pairing induced by dissipation. This is sort of a new kind of a mechanism, if you want to call it, for pairing induced by dissipation, very unusual. I talked then about this Rydberg quantum simulator, and I said that the reason for mentioning it here is this, that the ion trap people are able to do this stabilizer cooling, which I really find amazing in their experiments. And if one is able to do the same thing in these 2D lattices, as indicated with these Rydberg atoms, we are sort of, you know, at the point where we are doing realizing Kitaev models and you know, cooling to the ground state of Kitaev models and all of these things here in a stroboscopic way. But I think we also have ideas how to do this with an always-on. And then in the last part, I said that this is sort of going back to the roots and adding spontaneous emission as a decoherence element in the standard discussion of Hubbard models in optical lattices. And I believe that there would be a lot of you know, overlap with existing experiments that actually could test, you know, for different kind of quantum phases, for bosons, but maybe also fermions, this kind of decoherence. Okay, thank you.
I didn't quite understand the point about, in this case, where you're in the blue lattice, that you don't get the up and down process, but only the...
No, what I'm saying is that the lowest order, you know, this is the dominant process, and I'm only plotting here the lowest order processes in the sense of the Lamb-Dickey expansion. Okay? So the lowest order Lamb-Dickey, okay?
Because of the fact that in order to get this scattering, you have to move away from...
That's right.
But, and of course, that's the sort of semi-classical picture. But as you pointed out, the heating rate is the same, even though semi-classical.
That's right. But the statement is that the heating rate is not the relevant thing alone. I mean, because these things do not thermalize.
Right. Now, what I was wondering was this magic factor that the heating rate is the same regardless of whether you're red or blue, which is a bit surprising. And I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but even though you're sitting in the dark here, you heat just as much as if you're sitting in the light. In a lambda over two lattice, if the lattice is longer than lambda over two, then that's not any longer the case, if I'm remembering correctly. So about that, have you thought about
Well, at the moment, we have sort of analyzed this thing over here. We are actually on the way of sort of analyzing, the Harvard and plus other people's kind of microscope from this point of view, where you have the standard lattice, in this sense over here. But then you put on the laser that's, very close to resonance, and then analyzing the corresponding, understanding the continuous measurement process that's going on by seeing the spontaneous emission. But we haven't done this yet.
Either we are going to have to use the microphone, or Peter will have to repeat the question.
I'm pretty loud.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
I think the linking cannot be overheard.
So I'm wondering about the background gas in the vacuum and the effect that that can have in addition to spontaneous emission. And that's one part. And the other part is, how far can you actually simulate with this modified CMRE method? How many sites are you doing up to limits 1B?
Okay.
So summarize the question.
Okay, so there was a question, what about background gas collisions? Yes, of course they are there. They are a question of the vacuum, and just, add these things in addition to the story. I think that these are sort of separate physical effects that, depending on what the experiment is, you have to add independently. We analyze the problem, what's the effect of spontaneous emission? And what you say, could in certain experiments be very important. I agree with that. The other part is on what you can do with time-dependent DMRG, and I think that Andrew should make a comment at this point because he was the one doing the calculations. And let me just make the general remark. In the case we're interested in here, we're interested in very weak optical bumping or sort of dissipation here, because otherwise you would destroy this thing immediately. This is a small effect. Otherwise, these experiments that this whole group of people here has done would not have been possible. So we are interested in this particular limit, but maybe Andrew can also...
Hold off on Andrew's until we get these portable mics, because we want to make sure that we're in the process of getting. Here we have. Okay, great. So if we
Is this working?
Yeah.
The basic bottom line is that we're able to do simulations here for, I think, realistic experimental parameters and size scales, of course, only for 1D systems. This is what we're able to do with time-dependent DMRG. And we're able to simulate these things, or we have been simulating these things for about 36 particles and 36 lattice sites, and to timescales of sort of 20 to 30 times the tunneling time in the lattice. So this is sort of a reasonable time scale in order to really get the basic effects of the heating. And but in principle, there's nothing stopping us doing that for slightly larger system sizes and slightly longer time scales. These calculations, we're running about 1,000 trajectories and quantum trajectories and doing calculations on our clusters, which took us a few days. So these were sort of out of practical considerations, but we could do things sort of over longer time scales if it was useful for the experiments. No, so we're starting essentially with a pure ground state from the Bose-Hubbard model, from a DMRG calculation, and we're propagating basically the system based on the master equation that describes the heating process, using time-dependent DMRG combined with quantum trajectories methods from quantum optics that allow us to simulate this dissipative dynamics of the master equation by doing a sampling over stochastic trajectories, basically. So we're time-evolving pure states.
Peter, actually, I have a question to the stability of this state, which is generated by a designer, Leo Villian, so to say. If I have a ground state of an Hamiltonian with a sufficiently large energy gap, then any fluctuations in the numbers of the Hamiltonian, any small perturbation or even any additional losses or any additional dissipation, if you don't have it, even if you don't have it under good control, typically does not destroy the state. Now, how would this translate into your Leo Villian?
So there's one steady state, and the quantum jump operators are actually designed in such a way that the steady state is a pure state and is unique. Okay, so this means. Right, but it means that any small fluctuation that you have around the state in the sense of some density operator would actually damp out. And the example that I showed, for example, in the case of this D-wave pairing, we can analyze this damping out in this neighborhood of this particular attractive state, which was the D-wave paired state, and it sort of maps onto the standard analysis of calculating the excitation spectrum in the BCS model, doing mean field theory. It's the same kind of equation except with an imaginary part in front. So this means that we can calculate the eigenspectrum of the Leo Villian, No, and we find that there's exponential approach to the ground state. And so this means that any small fluctuations sort of, you know, damp out if there's no additional other term. If you add other terms to the Hamiltonian that correspond to standard decoherence, of course, it will take it away and sort of, make it not the pure state that we wanted to have. So there will be a competition between this engineered driving that we have at a certain rate plus the other one. And it's a question that you have to override all these other degrees of decoherence that you have with your engineered dissipation here. No, not at all. I mean, let's simply put Hamiltonian equal to zero. We have here, you know, if you calculate the spectrum of your Liouvillean, it has one state, you know, with zero, and then there's in the imaginary sense an energy gap, but now that corresponds to an exponential decay. There's a gap, and then are the other states. Ah, okay, you're saying that what happens if you add the Hamiltonian to this whole thing? This is exactly the part that I left out over here when I said, you know, there will be a competition between Liouvillean damping, you know, that really produces the state, and the Hamiltonian part. And in the example where the Liouvillean gives you a BC, you know, forces this thing into a BC, and you add the Hamiltonian power, the kinetic energy in the case of a BC doesn't change anything. The question is, you know, what are the interactions? And there it turns out, if you switch on the interactions a little bit, you deplete your condensate. So it's like the standard depletion in a somewhat different form, but if you make it too large, there's a quantum phase transition to a phase that sort of looks like thermal, but this is not an equilibrium problem. So there's a quantum phase transition. So in a small, with a small perturbation, you know, it changes it a little bit away from the state, but at one point, if you make this too large, there's quantum phase transitions. Okay.
One more question.
Peter, I think these really wonderful ideas, but I wonder how you can add or maybe restrict that by, in addition, observing the spontaneous photon.
Ah,
of course,
okay.
What I have
yes,
in mind
yes,
is a
okay.
KLM yeah, scheme okay. or heralded photon, you know, or this
yeah.
kind of thing. If you observe the spontaneous
yeah.
photon, you have another knob, right?
You're completely right. So two comments. I mean, in the experiment that Rainer Platt did in the ion trap, of course, he could also read this auxiliary atom that knows about, you know, this stabilizer if you're on one manifold or on the other one, this even an odd parity state. And so Rainer Platt, in this sense, in the experiment, was able to do a quantum non-demolition measurements of stabilizers, okay, which is really quite remarkable. But the same thing also applies, of course, to the whole lattice, where you can, for example, start to read out these auxiliary atoms. And based on that, you can, you know, give this was sort of an open loop. You can also make a closed loop by then feeding back information. And all of these ideas about fault tolerant quantum computing that require this reading out, and that's exactly what you say. Yeah, it's true.
Okay, I'm going to sadly have to bring the discussion to a close. Let's thank Peter one more time. Now, before we go to the break, Vincent wants to make an announcement, and I also want to ask, on your way to the break, would the speakers in the next portion, that would be Debbie and Shankar, come and hook your computers up to the switcher? And now, Vincent.
All right, it's about the poster. So for those who already sent in a title for the posters, so the poster boards are already ready, and so feel free to use that now. And the poster boards will be displayed starting from today all the way through Friday.